You're listening to the Something Beautiful podcast. For more information about our show or to find links mentioned in this week's episode, please be sure to visit somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.
Well, hello there out in Something Beautiful podcast land. It's Johnny Laird here. You haven't heard from me for a while. Very busy in my life. Lots of new things going on that I can talk to you about at some point, including a new gig, a new full-time job. But that's a story for another day. But today, I'm really, really delighted to welcome one of my dear friends and someone who I met offline. And we now are good buddies offline as well, which is very important. And that's Bex Lewis. Hi, Bex.
Hi, Johnny.
Now, Bex, I know you as Bex, but actually, you're rather more grandly titled than that. Well, what's your kind of what's your full name and title?
So, my passport name.
God, give me the whole deal. Whatever you like.
My passport name is Dr. Rebecca Mary Lewis. So, but no one calls me that apart from my mum.
You can always rely on mum to give you the full royal treat, so that's good, that's good.
Yeah. No, I even publish as Bex, so it's more friendly.
Exactly. And, I mean, in terms of publishing, there's certainly a whole raft of stuff out there online, which we'll talk about in a minute, and also kind of published theses and all kinds of bits and pieces floating around as well. But before we get kind of into where you're at and the work that you've been involved in recent years, can you tell us, because we always tend to do this with most of the shows that we do, can you tell us a little bit about your early life, what made you, and perhaps when we've heard a little bit about that, you can tack on it towards the end of that. Something about your early faith journey, particularly, that would be something that would be interesting to all of the guys and girls who listen out there. So shoot, tell me about your childhood, as they say.
I'm a country girl. I'm a farm girl. My dad's a dairy farmer, so I grew up in Sussex on a farm, spent most of my time playing in the woods and the hay bales.
Okay, but for most of the folks who are listening, for the largest part, I suppose, are going to be in North America and stuff. So tell them a little bit about Sussex as well.
Sussex is a real southern county in the UK. We have this whole joke about north-south divide, which sometimes is less jokey than we'd like it to be. And down south, you know, most of us are relatively well off. Nice green rolling hills, all the stuff you see in England's green and pleasant land has probably been taken in Sussex. So it's a pretty nice place to grow up. Farm life's a bit hard though, but short of painting my dad's parlour every summer, I don't really do that much on the farm.
So literally when you were young, you kind of get your sleeve rolled up and get involved in the whole deal, is that right?
When we were too young, we'd just go and take the picnics out during the summer when the combining was going on, because otherwise we'd never see my dad.
Wow.
And then as we got older, we'd do a little bit of following him around and feeding some animals, and then doing something a bit bigger when we got older, so we all had a go. I've got four brothers, so we're quite a busy family.
Okay, so the kind of the whole faith element of that was your family a Christian environment? Was that something that came along later?
My family were all Christians. One of them's not at the moment, but the rest of us still are. I grew up in a Brethren environment.
Okay.
So that's a interesting background. I don't go to Brethren Church anymore. I go to an Anglican church, but I wouldn't describe myself as an Anglican. I don't think it really matters. You know, I don't think the church you go to means you necessarily makes you a particular label. But yeah, I do go to an Anglican church at the moment. But yeah, I sort of did that whole thing about where I've always been slightly jealous of people who've had
the miraculous conversion.
Yeah. Whereas mine was a sort of gentle rumble. and I mean, there's a few moments you can kind of pick where things really change. So I went to a Billy Graham event and he said, "Have you got a place in heaven?" And I started thinking, I really want one. Really started striving for one, which of course is not the point. I went on an Oak Hall holiday where someone talked about grace for the whole week, got back for church and someone talked about grace at church, and it sort of finally made sense that it's not about what you do, it's about who you are.
Yes, indeed. I mean, and grace is one of those big themes that is such a thing to explore, isn't it? It can be such a life-defining, paradigm, really, I suppose is the word. And if you live your life by it, it's a challenge, but it's very, very important. It's good stuff. So, we like grace. Something beautiful.
Okay. It's trying to remember it all the time, isn't it? And not going back to works, and more works.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, okay, well, we've heard a little bit about your early life, and then I guess because of the kind of person you are, there was a time when you got really quite embroiled in academia. I'd like to kind of explore, if I can, for a minute, particularly for those who are listening and are not familiar with who you are now and your work. You're a staggeringly busy lady, and you introduced me or reintroduced me or reminded me of what the word polymath meant. And rather more sinisterly, you're also sometimes described as a scanner, which I have to say I find slightly scary.
Have you seen that film? The one that I've never seen that everyone talks about?
No, I've never seen it either. They're the kind of movies that I avoid because I'm kind of a bit lily-livered, so I kind of don't kind of go for that. But let's leave the scanner bit to the side for the moment. Let's talk about the polymath. Can you talk about the breadth of the kind of things that you're up to in your working life at the moment? I mean, because in all seriousness, you are, like I said, you're an incredibly busy lady, but also you're heavily involved even now in academia. And how does that all stack up? What are your roles and responsibilities today?
Well, I think if you added them up, you'd probably find it was slightly too much. But, you know, we just keep going through it. But I'm loving everything I'm doing this year. I've just got to get a slightly better balance of work and not work. But I think that's part of what happens when you do work that you really enjoy, is you're not quite sure where the cutoff is. So you just kind of get embroiled and you think, oh, this is great, I'm really enjoying myself. But I have about four jobs at the moment. I'm working for the University of Winchester, which is where I did my PhD.
Okay.
And
which
I work
also in the south of England.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. It used to, 1,000 years ago, it used to be the capital of England.
Right.
I 2 days a week I spend time trying to encourage academics to use electronic learning tools to improve their teaching. So we're not trying to say replace anything with a computer, but have a look at these tools and see if they can make what you're doing better or make you do it in a different or more interesting way. And out of that, I'm teaching on media studies, where we've just built a new module where rather than the students last year kind of had to sit in a row and listen.
Okay.
And this year, using what's called a kind of active learning approach.
Right.
So we have a certain number of skills that we want them to get, and we devise tasks for them to do which we think will help them reach those skills. So they don't spend that long sat in front of a PowerPoint presentation. They spend most of their time going off and doing stuff and having meetings with us as consultants. So that's really exciting. I also teach history and and I have my own studies. I have one essay left to write by the 1st of April, which I started 2 years ago. but my deadline's coming up, so I might actually write it now. And I also work for the University of Durham 50% of my time for a research centre called CODEC, which isn't an acronym, but it stands for Christian Communication in a Digital Age, or the Centre for. And a CODEC, I'm a little bit fuzzy on this, but it's something to do with translating between one thing and another in computing terminology.
Ah, okay. Okay, so it's computer speak.
Yeah.
Or something or other.
Yeah.
Okay.
So look at us, people that think are techies, we don't know exactly what I mean. So.
Right, yeah, that's it. Well, that's why I'm not actually a geek, but I am a friend of the geek. Because I like to hang out with people who know what they're talking about.
Yeah, we know who to call.
Exactly, yeah. But again, another interesting thing, and forgive me if I keep trying to refer to this in terms of... on behalf of people who may not know, but you have Winchester, which is essentially down in the south. Of England, and you have Durham, which is effectively right at the other end of the country.
Yeah, so if I do a train journey, it's about 5 hours.
and currently, if I've got this right, currently we're only on the description of job number two.
Yeah, no, that's four jobs. There's Winchester. I'm doing three jobs for them.
Ah, okay.
I'm doing one to the University of Durham, plus I've got my own consultancy, but that I just say to people, I've got no time till July.
All right.
So, which is me being grown up for once.
So you're stretched in terms of time, but also you're stretched kind of geographically and
yes,
logistically as well. Wow.
Yes, although we have decided to make a feature out of the fact that I live in the south. And rather than having to trek up to Durham every week, I go to London, and I'm based at Premier Radio, which is a Christian radio station in London.
Ah, okay.
So I commute into there, which is about an hour each way rather than
so that's
five.
A lot more doable.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
great.
And it's great because it puts us right in the middle of, the projects I'm doing, I guess we haven't said, I'm doing the Big Bible Project, which is a house group, which we might talk more about, but also trying to encourage more people to use online tools in the Christian community. So Premier being a media organisation, we're right in the middle of that. We're near a lot of other Christian organisations, can talk to them and start to help things happening in the middle of London. So it's not just I don't want to commute 11 hours every 2 days. It's more, we actually think we can get something out of being in London.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about the Big Bible in a few minutes. But then there's one other thing, there's two other things really I wanted to kind of have a little chat about before we get into the Big Bible and explore what that's about and how people can participate and timelines on that whole thing, because that's quite an exciting project. But there's two things I want to ask you about. One I find fascinating because when I was kind of, as I often do, I was kind of Googling you and trying to go a little bit deeper about what I needed to know about Bex before I spoke to her for the podcast. You were described as the leading expert, the definitive article, the leading expert on Second World War propaganda posters. Now, I think in the UK, if I said keep calm and carry on, for the most part, people would know, you know, that would a light bulb would go above their head and they would recognise that poster and the thing that appears on T-shirts and mugs and has become a big, big commercial entity in the UK, this old World War II posters. I'm not sure whether that translates to our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world. It may or may not. I don't know. But
the States have picked up on it.
Oh, cool. So, yeah. So tell us a little bit about that whole deal and how you were involved in that. And then beyond that, we're going to talk about social media stuff.
Yeah. Well, I started a PhD in 1997, which is about British home front propaganda posters. I'd spotted them nice and colourful in a museum, and I thought, well, if I spotted them, I'm sure someone else did. And I'm really interested in how you get a message across in a short amount, because as an academic, I naturally write long. So it's really interesting to see how you can rewrite something to get the same message across really short. And so I ended up spending 6 years writing my PhD on Second World War propaganda posters, spent ages in the Imperial War Museum in London, the National Archives, where all the government papers are, and produced a PhD thesis, which was one of only 5% in the country that was passed without corrections. So,
good girl.
Yeah, so I was very excited, because at one point I thought I was never going to finish it at all. So to get that was really good. And I was examined by a guy called Asa Briggs, which anyone who's into history will probably have heard of him. He's pretty well known. Yeah, I just loved it, and I just love looking at all these different posters, and, you know, you said I'm a polymath. I can get bored of things quite quickly, and I have still not got bored every time I see a new piece of information or a new poster, and I first started writing about them before 97. I wrote about them for my A-levels, which is the sort of 16 to 18-year-old education bit in the UK, and I just love it. I just think they're really colourful. And one of the big conclusions I came to in my PhD was that whereas posters for places like Germany, they were, you know, they were all the same design because that's what the government would say they had to do. But in the UK, because we're a democracy, we've got a real range of posters because they kind of put an idea out to the artists and then say, give us what you've got on that and we'll see what we use, which I love that whole kind of creative thing. So beautiful pictures, some of them are terrible, but you know, can't have everything. And the big thing that came out of it, which actually wasn't big when I was writing my PhD, so I wrote about a set of three posters that were produced in 1939, one of which was the most famous poster before Keep Calm took off, was something like, your courage, your cheerfulness, your resolution will bring us victory. And there was a lot of fuss because they were saying, oh, you're telling us, the everyday people, to do what you, the government, want us to do.
Okay.
So there's a lot of material about those three posters, which is the reason why I had quite a lot of information on Keep Calm and Carry On. So I've written all the history to Keep Calm and Carry On because I'd written the history about the your courage. And then once I realised that Keep Calm had started to make a public appearance, I started blogging about that. I'd had a website since 97, but I started my first blog, aside from a travel blog when I was travelling, but that was all, I didn't have to think about how to set that up, I just used someone else's. This was my first own blog. And I started blogging about all the different mentions I could find of Keep Calm and Carry On. I'm a little bit sporadic at the moment because I'm, as you said, I'm quite busy. But every time someone sends me one, I put that in as an entry and say, look what I've just found.
So why do you think it's had such an amazing impact? I mean, it really has become almost ubiquitous and people recognise it nationwide, and it's a real... why is that?
I think it's particularly the recession. I mean, the guy who found it up in Newcastle 10 years ago, maybe 11 years ago already, he found an original in the bottom of a box where goodness knows where it came from, because the poster was never actually used in the war.
Which makes it even more staggering, I think.
Yeah, it's more of a 21st century icon, really, than a wartime icon.
Yeah.
And there's only two known to be in existence, so he quite liked it, so he made some posters out of it and has been selling them for... We've been selling them for about 8 years, and then a couple of years ago when the recession hit, suddenly everyone was using it. Apparently Gordon Brown had it up in his office and all this kind of thing. And suddenly people started doing all these different things. I mean, the one that I particularly saw in the States, someone did Keep Calm and Have a British Accent, because the British are, you know, synonymised with being calm and stoic and getting on with it.
For that, you know, I could never figure that one out, because I don't know whether that's actually true, certainly not in my case.
No, but it's the same as, you know, war was lovely and we had a cup of tea and we all knew each other better. It's like, yeah, that's the way history's been written, to make it seem like it was all right to go to war, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, that's my historian coming out. I can waffle on about that for ages. But now I just think the recession has really kicked it on. And, you know, I ended up talking to the New York Times about it.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Yeah, so that was very exciting. And that suddenly hit my blog post stats, which had been... They'd already got up to about 8,000 a month, but it suddenly went to 12,000 for the 2 months that the New York Times article was whizzing around online. I mean, it's still online, but people aren't really talking about it anymore.
Well, that's staggering. Well, I suppose that kind of bumps me into this kind of whole thing about social media, which is I can't actually quite remember how we started to first engage in dialogue. I don't know if you can, but I can't, which I think is a commonality now with a lot of the folks that are a really big part of my life now. And we kind of bounced into each other via one kind of social media or another, and we're now fully engaged. You're a real kind of, I'm not sure whether advocate is the right word, but you're certainly a very, very active user of social media, and that seems to bleed into everything you do, including your work and your faith, and the whole thing. How important is it to you, and can you remember how we found each other? I don't know.
We might have found each other on a hashtag on Twitter. I think we were going to the same event.
Okay.
We started talking to each other and said, oh, I'm going, and I said, oh, well, let's say hi. I think that was the one at the NICC, which is London Institute for Contemporary Christianity, for anyone who doesn't know the acronym. Because that was definitely the first time we met face to face.
Indeed, yeah.
Because apparently you didn't look like your avatar, according to someone. Well, you weren't tall enough for your avatar.
I was not at all tall enough for my avatar. I met Jason Clark, who is almost worth putting a link up so that we can punish him for this. aberration of thinking that I would be somewhere in the area of 6'5", when I'm probably much closer to 5'6". And I'm sure he was very disappointed at all kinds of different levels. But you're right, we met Jason, who's a pastor and also a writer and quite an authority on kind of emerging church circles in the UK and the US, and a top man and a motorcyclist, and he's a lovely, lovely fella. But I will never forgive him for assuming he got me a foot wrong.
It's just funny, all the assumptions you make about people, and some people you turn up and you go, you're exactly how I imagined you'd be. I gave a conference paper with someone I'd only ever talked to on Twitter, and that was part of our paper, was that it's possible to do this kind of thing. And we'd had the odd email as well, but essentially our main correspondence was through Twitter. And we turned up, and I kind of, about half an hour later, I forgot I'd only just met him. And I was doing that kind of thing where you're a little bit rude to people that you know quite well because you like them.
There's a space now where you meet someone for the first time who you've already had a relationship with online, and actually, it's a different thing. The sense of engagement is you're at a different place if you had not previously known them before in any shape or form.
Yeah.
And it's a new phenomena. Only in the last 3 or 4 years, perhaps, where you do meet someone for the first time. But you do have a kind of sense of, perhaps intimacy is too strong a word and it overstates it, but you do have a sense of knowing each other, not in the biblical sense, but understanding a little bit of character and nuance and subtlety and all that kind of thing. So you come equipped. So it's a new kind of, this new engagement is quite fascinating. And actually is one of the most fascinating things about social media in general. I suppose there are dangers and risks that sometimes you can get it so terribly wrong, but largely, the optimist and the glass half full in me says it's a lovely thing to be able to meet someone for the first time and actually think, you know, there are things that we have in common. There are areas where we find common ground and that we can agree and support each other and affirm each other and all those kind of things. I mean, it's interesting. I've kind of got the opposite experience at the moment, and I won't mention names, not that it would make any difference really, but I've started to engage with a guy who I feel is probably quite the opposite of me in worldview, politically. We both have a faith, but we come from completely different places in terms of tradition, although we're from the same tribe, strangely enough. But we come from different ends of the spectrum. And it's a tough one, because almost every subject we have diametrically opposed views. But at least there's a dialogue going on. And I'm kind of, I did dip out for a day, and I thought, I'm not going to follow you anymore because I don't like the stuff you're saying. But I changed my mind because I thought it is better to engage and kind of keep it rolling. I'm waffling on a little there.
but it's good to have the conversations out in the air rather than, you know, I'm no theologian, but there's something in the Bible about, you know, if you've got a problem, you should talk to each other rather than everyone else.
Yeah.
And I think most of us still do talk to everyone else before we... I mean, sometimes that everyone else, people have got to think whether the public space or the more private formats are better. But, you know, that space is there to say, well, I'll support your right to have this view, but I don't agree with you, and this is why I don't agree with you. And you can have a great conversation online.
You can.
And then you carry it on offline.
What encourages me about faith, in some situations, in some cultural environments, we are slow on the uptake. And in certain areas, it could be said that in social media, certain elements of the church are slow on the uptake. But conversely, the flip side of that is there are some folks who are brilliantly engaged. They're really using the technology super well, and are right at the bleeding edge of how this all works. And it doesn't dilute what they are as Jesus people or anything like that. But they're doing some of the most exciting stuff out there in any environment. So, you know, which is why I'm encouraged by people who are involved with stuff like Minds, who you may or may not be familiar with, or the guys who are doing the YouVersion Bible stuff. Yeah, and even the kind of things, that the quality and level of media that is put out by people like Flannel, who did the Numa stuff. You know, this faith stuff stands alone as being of an excellent quality and really, really... And you know what I think it's about? It goes back to the theme of Something Beautiful, really. It's about because in our faith, a big part of what we are about is telling stories, the good news, the gospel. And you talked about not being a theologian. You know, logos, words about God. You know, we're in the business of telling stories, and we're in the business of communicating, which is why these tools are so good and can be effectively used as part of that kind of faith journey that we're all about. So we talked, we just kind of slowly stumbling in the direction of the Big Bible. Talk to me about the Big Bible Project.
Okay, well, that we started in July last year, and this is through the University of Durham. And Pete Phillips was the one who originally kind of made everything happen, like so many things. And so last year, for Lent, up in the Northeast, a whole load of people read Tom Wright's lectionary book on Luke. I think it was sort of 300-500 people from all the different
churches. This is Bishop Tom Wright, a.k.a. N.T. Wright.
Yes.
Everyone's favourite New Testament theologian.
Yes, and apparently I think my understanding is he writes N.T. Wright for his academic stuff and Tom Wright for his more accessible stuff.
That's what I understand as well, yeah.
So, and he came in yesterday to do his videos for the Big Bible, and I was supposed to be keeping track of time, and I kept looking up and realising I was listening to what he was saying far too closely, and not giving him his time balance.
Hey, why waste an opportunity listening to Tom Wright?
Really good. We're filming it all, so everyone else can watch it, and we were on time. So when they did that last year, they thought that worked really well. Got lots of people from different churches chatting to each other within kind of the local setting. But they said, you know, this, we want to do this nationally. So my brief was, Tom Wright's writing this book, it'll be out shortly, and we want to see something new media with it. So we had a look at what other people were doing for Bible Fresh. For those who don't know, that is, this year, 2011, is the 400th anniversary of the King James Bible, which is largely seen as helping a lot of people engage in their own language with the Bible. So we want to celebrate that. So we're not using the King James, we're using Tom Wright's own translation in the book. Or people can use their own, any translation they like, within the actual. And so we're building a house group on top of that book, but we wanted to make sure the material was online and do something a lot more kind of online than anyone's ever done. It's quite experimental, so it's a mixture. I change between being excited by what I'm doing and absolutely terrified that no one's going to join in, because I won't know until another week and a half whether people are actually going to pick up what's in the book, really, and go online. We've got a few people commenting, and it's always really encouraging to see those.
What's the timeline on all of this? Bearing in mind that we're sitting here on a given day speaking to each other in different parts of the UK, and I'm not sure when this will go out on podcast, but talk to the timeline. And we'll try to fit in with it, hopefully.
So we do. This year we're looking at Matthew.
Okay.
So Lent starts. We want people to start with a pancake party on the 8th of March, which is Shrove Tuesday. We started off by calling it Mardi Gras, but then we realised the Methodists were doing because it's Fair Trade Week, they were doing a big party for Fair Trade and saying, let's have a pancake party. So we said, well, let's not try and dilute something that someone's already doing. Let's build on each other and do something together. So kind of cross-promoting what each are doing. So that's the kind of launch for the pancake party. Then the book readings start the next day. And then we've written 7 house groups, which if people were doing physical house groups would be too many. But what we're anticipating is that people will have their house group. It can be your normal house group, or you can set up one for this. There's some people at Winchester Cathedral who are doing this on top of whatever else they might be doing. And then the idea is, so you have your face-to-face house group. There's some challenges in the house group that may challenge you to go and do something online. But there's kind of 6 challenges each week, of which you pick one. So you can pick something different. And then the idea is that someone from that house group then goes online to the forum. It can be more than one person if you want. People can interact individually if they want and use the questions online, which is where we put them as well. And so go into the forum. And I think the big thing that we always think is that people in their house groups, you tend to stay in the same house group for a long time. It depends how your church runs it. I had one where they swapped everyone every 2 years. But the church I'm in now, they kind of like you settle in one until it either gets too big or, too small, and then you go to a different one. So you can become really, really comfortable talking to the same people, kind of nodding at each other, because you've just got in the habit of knowing what each other's going to say. So what we hope is that people going online and talking in the forum will give a chance for different viewpoints to come through.
Okay.
So the forum's already open.
What's the URL? What's the website address that people need to check out?
So you need to go to http://www, so bigbible.org.uk.
Okay.
That's the main site. If they go /forums, they'll get into the forum. And we're encouraging people this week, we're giving away some copies of Tom Wright's Matthew for Everyone and the Lent book, so 3 books. So we've got 14 sets of that. So we're trying to get people talking on the forum by saying anyone who posts on the forum can their names will be put in the hat for one of these sets of books. And we put that up yesterday, and we've had probably about 30 registrations today and maybe about 10 people writing on it, which from a zero start is pretty good.
No, it's pretty good. It's always a challenge to get people engaging online and, it starts small and grows. So that's exciting.
Yeah. So, we've had so much good feedback. The project was intended to run till the end of June. But because the site is also talking a lot more about positive news stories about what people are doing with new media in churches, so we'd love to hear from people who've tried something, even if it hasn't worked. We just want people to share their stories so that others realise they're not the only ones trying it, or that something has worked so that someone else doesn't have to go through the trial and error. And that's been getting really good coverage as well. So, we've already got the start of funding for next year, so hopefully we'll carry on.
I was going to say, so that, beyond that kind of Lent period, the whole bigbible.org.uk thing will carry on and
And we might find another book. We're still talking about it, but we think the book gives us something for people to experiment with, and for those, because we particularly want to encourage people who are not comfortable in the online environment, then they can have the book, and then if we can do prompts from the book. The publisher, SPCK, has noticed they've had a lot more books sold, so it's making that kind of difference. I'm very excited this morning. I saw the stats for the site. We launched the site on August the 16th. In November, we had 1,800 visitors. This month, we've had 3,600 already. So
well,
it's building.
yeah, obviously what we'll do as well, and on our own site, we'll put some links up so people can visit when they come on and listen to you, Bex, that they'll be directed to Big Bible as well. So that'll be helpful, hopefully. Yeah.
Oh, I said 3,600. It's 4,600.
Woohoo!
Yeah. So, and about 50% of people are staying on and reading for about 3.5 minutes. So it's not just how many people we've got, it's people staying and reading. So it's really exciting. And for something so new, it's kind of encouraging.
Good. So, well, like I say, whatever we can do to help and support that, we'll work some links up and hopefully we can encourage some of our listeners from across the globe to check it out. So we're kind of getting towards the end of our time. We talked about your early life and your growing up in faith. What's your current situation in terms of faith community at the moment?
I kind of see I've got a faith community all over the place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
I've got my local church that I go to every week. And they've been really encouraging. So I meet those guys. We arrange to meet up on Facebook with all the sort of 20s and 30s before I drop out of that age group.
Oh, you're a mere baby compared to the archaic likes of me.
Yes, I'm on my downhill slope through the 3 score and 10 though. I've got that local community, but I was really challenged, I think, several years ago when I was at that church before I went away and went travelling. It's kind of changed my perspective on lots of things. I managed to travel around the world for 7 months, so that was awesome. And it was the idea that, yes, we had the Walk of 1,000 Men, which was a kind of mission-based thing in the cathedral grounds. And the idea was that you invited your friends along. And then we kind of realised that most of us were only friends with people in church. So right. We didn't really have people to invite.
Which often happens.
Yeah. So I think ever since then I've gone out of my way to make... I mean, I just love meeting new people and getting to know people. And so I've got to know a lot of people from other backgrounds. And that's, I love Twitter and Facebook for that. Twitter more than Facebook, probably.
And you know what? Going to put a guy out on a little bit of a limb here now. I agree with you, and some of the social media stuff has put me in all kinds of different environments that I never expected to be in, you know. And it's sometimes the non-faith guys that I somehow relate to more and get on with better and find a kind of level of engagement with that is special in a way that sometimes I don't get with other parts of my kind of faith community. But there you go.
Well, I think, to be honest, just because you both happen to be Christians doesn't necessarily mean you're naturally going to connect.
No.
And I think, you know, there's always going to be people you're going to get on with better than others, and you may find some of those online and some of those, at church or whatever, wherever you're going to. And I just love having a mix from across the place.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good to know. So what's next, you know, in terms of where you're going with life and projects, what does the future hold?
I'm kind of keeping calm and carrying on.
Good.
So I've got to get my assignment out of the way, which then means I become a fellow of the Higher Education Academy. And at the moment I'm waiting on both my jobs to find out if both of them are coming through. So we think the Durham one's going to come through, and my Winchester one. I'm officially on 1 day a week. I've been doing 2 days a week for a year. And it looks like in a time when most of the university is cutting back, it looks like I might be moving to half a contract. So that's kind of the next year. I don't really know beyond there. And I've kind of changed, I think. I mean, a couple of years ago, when I came back from my travels, it was just as the recession hit, and I refused to read newspapers because I didn't want to know what was going on, because I didn't want to know how bad the job market was. And I think I've just become a lot calmer, and I've done a lot more things where I've gone to things that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
So I went to an event that I met Pete at, and that's where all the Durham workers come out of. And just going to things that genuinely interest me means I come across as the enthusiastic self that I am in that kind of setting, and then people talk to me and then stuff comes out of that. So
I think more and more people are kind of exploring this lifestyle where that, you know, it's not simply one job, one career, one pathway all of the time. And we're many of us are much more portfolio orientated. I mean, I've had a little bit of a shift in my life, like I mentioned at the very beginning. So I'm less portfolio than I was 4 or 5 months ago. But there's still elements of that in what I do. And I think more and more of us, and especially in the circles that we frequent, I like that. So,
And it's enjoyable. And it's finding, it's kind of going from a background where I kind of grew up thinking that, if you didn't like something, that must be what God wanted you to do. To a belief that God made me who I am, so therefore he wants to use the skills that I've got. So, and I trained as a life coach a couple of years ago. I've not really practiced as one, but I use all the training that I got in sort of all the jobs that I do. And it's the thinking about, you know, what did God create me to be and what does he want me to do? And that doesn't mean I can't wash my hands of cleaning the toilet and all that kind of stuff, but it does mean I'm actively looking for stuff that uses the skills that I've been given.
That sounds kind of a lot like a lot of the stuff that Thomas Maffey, one of our co-hosts, often says. It's very kind of, certainly reminds me of that, it brings him to mind. So where can we find you online? Is there one place or several places that
If you just Google for Bex with an X Lewis, I'm the first page and a half of Google, as far as I know.
Okay.
So I'm pretty easy to find.
Bex Lewis, B-E-X Lewis, and the Lewis is the L-E-W-I-S.
So keep that,
folks.
And Dr. Bexl is my other username, D-R-B-E-X-L. You can find me in lots of places on that username.
That's good to know. So I don't know whether there's anything that you want to say to those Something Beautiful podcast listeners. I know that you you certainly engage online with quite a number of them as well. So I don't know if there's anything you, before we go, if there's anything kind of a last thing you'd like to shout out to them, but that might be.
I'm just going to carry on and enjoy my conversations and go and listen to more of the podcasts.
Rather
than just talking to them.
Please do that. And and hopefully when this gets up online, you can give us a few links and sprinkle some SEO fairy dust all over this whole thing. We're glad to be doing what we do. We're very privileged, and we love telling people's stories, and we love talking to them. And tonight it's been really, really good to talk to you, Bex. I've learned a few more things. I'm no doubt within a month or two we'll have another chance to go to another conference or another tweet up or something where we can catch up and have a cup of coffee. But it's been good to chat, and I hope you've enjoyed the experience of Something Beautiful. And we'll give you a shout when it's out, and let's spread the word together.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
Thank you. Reach for
If you have any questions or comments about this show, we do encourage you to drop us a line. You can email us, somethingbeautifulpodcast@gmail.com, or call our listener line, 972-535-8980, 972-535-8980, or anywhere in the world if you're on Skype, simply Skype J.D. Blundell, and you can find a link to that right on our podcast page at www.somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to the Something Beautiful podcast. Join us again next week at somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.